Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
And it's me, Stephen Scott, back with you again. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet is also here. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, everyone.
Yes, we've even got Andy back with us again. Hello, Andy.
I'm here somewhere. Hello to you both.
Are you there? Are you all right?
I think so. Let me check. Yeah, I'm here. Good.
I'm not going to ask what you just did. Right, okay. No. Look, we've got lots to get through. Obviously, we have all the emails to come. We're going to get into some news as well. Very excited about that. But we want to kick off. Robin has been saying this to me 100 times. Look, we've got to mention this thing. So what is it you want to mention, Robin? Get on with it.
So, AbilityNet have a series of webinars. We have a couple a week, actually. But the one that I wanted to draw people's attention to, it might be particularly relevant or appealing, it's accessible design tips. And obviously, amongst the different disabilities, it's going to mention about vision impairment, both screen reader users and low vision. How can you design accessibly? And it's going to be aimed at a broad audience, and it's free. So now there's a bit of a clash because it's on the 1 p.m. Tuesday the 14th of July. So next Tuesday.
Was badly scheduled.
I know. But anyway, so, you know, to struggle or kind of wrestle with your conscience and decide which one you want to do.
Well, you can listen to the podcast, so it's all right. You can get away with it. You can listen to us later.
The person is talking, Sarah Zama. She's at Sony now, but she was 7 years at Guide Dogs. And she's going to be talking about, yeah, as I mentioned, all things accessibility when it comes to creating things, designing things in the digital realm. Give it a go. The URL to get more information, you go to abilitynet.org.uk/accessible-design-tips. But we will put that URL to register in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and we can tweet that out as well and let people know that is going on. You can follow us at RNIB Radio if you want to on Twitter. And, you know, I know RNIB are doing a lot of these webinars as well, and I hope we'll get some more information on those soon, because I've been asking the team to, especially the Technology for Life team, to send us information about this, because there are lots of really useful webinars going on around how to use assistive tech if you're blind or partially sighted, or even if you're a sighted volunteer, or even a blind or partially sighted volunteer who, you know, helps out in the team to, you know, support a lot of people. Of course, all support now is remote. It's no longer because of the coronavirus. Nobody's heading outside and nobody's going to visit people in homes or anything. So for that reason, if you do need tech support from RNIB, you want to call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. And make sure that you get in touch and ask to get put through to the Technology for Life team. We're even on Be My Eyes now as well, the Be My Eyes app. You can search for RNIB there under specialist support, and you can use our services of the Technology for Life team there as well, which is absolutely fantastic. We're going to kick off with a demo. We don't often do this, but we're going to kick off with a demo right off the bat today. David Woodbridge bought himself an iPhone SE. Ah, I do love my iPhone SE. You love your iPhone. Well, you don't have an iPhone SE yet, do you, Robin?
As good as. I've got the 8, which is probably identical in almost every way, apart from maybe slightly slower.
Yeah, garbage. Bennett, get it sold. And Andy's got an Android phone. Let's just move away from that.
Yeah, I'm on the Huawei bandwagon.
Sounds like a great movie. Yeah. I quite fancy watching the Huawei bandwagon. When, is that audio described?
Is it a 5G connected bandwagon?
Driverless. Well, anyway, let's move away from Android and let's stay with Apple and talk about Apple's iPhone SE as David Woodbridge tells us how he's been getting on with his.
Hi, and welcome to this demo of the iPhone SE. So before I get onto a physical description of the iPhone SE, just let me remind you what you get in the box. Of course, you get the iPhone SE itself, an iPhone 5-watt charger, which I think is a bit sad, because this thing will definitely charge with an 18-watt charger. The Lightning earpods, so that's not the earpods with a 3.5 mm, it's got the Lightning connector on it. And then of course you also get a getting started guide, And normally in the Getting Started Guide, you have that tiny little SIM ejection tool that, of course, you can use to push out the SIM tray on the right-hand side of the phone to pop your physical SIM into the phone. So that's what you get in the box. I've got the iPhone SE in my hand, and I'll just go around the sides firstly. So on the right-hand side towards the top, of course, we've got our power on off button. Down the bottom, in the middle, we have the Lightning headphone jack. We've got stereo speakers, and we've also got a microphone. And the left-hand side towards the top, coming back down from the top, we've got our ringer or silent switch where I can flick up or flick down. And if I flick down towards the back of the phone with the switch, I can feel the phone vibrate, so it's in silent mode. And then below that, we've got our good old traditional volume up and volume down rectangular buttons as well. On the back of the phone, we've got a nice glass back, and of course that's where we can now wirelessly charge the iPhone SE in this case. And of course that's been available, as far as I understand, since the iPhone 8, so that's a really, really handy feature. Then also on the back of the phone, as I'm looking at it, top left hand side, you have a round raised camera, which is the back camera of the iPhone SE. If I turn it around to the front, at the top, coming down a little bit from the top edge, we have a speaker grill. That area also contains the front facing camera. And then right down the bottom, we have our traditional home button that I can feel, little cut out round circle. The home button on the iPhone 7 and above is actually a haptic button, so it doesn't actually mechanically move. It vibrates when you press it, and that tricks your mind into thinking that you're pressing a real button. Between the speaker grill up the top and the home button down the bottom, you have the 4.7 inch diagonal screen. So that's the general phone layout. As far as the innards of the phone are concerned, it replicates the A13 Bionic chip that we also find in the iPhone 11 Pro. Of course, the camera is not the same as you would find in the iPhone 11, because that's got a dual camera system, a dual lens, and the triple one, of course, in the iPhone 11 Pro. Some people have said to me that the camera is in between a iPhone XR and a iPhone 11. But honestly, for most things that I do, particularly as a blind person, the front-facing camera and the back-facing camera, because I'm not going to worry about how many pixels they are, certainly do the job for things like barcode reading with the Seeing AI app, optical character recognition, OCR, object recognition, and of course using video type support services like Be My Eyes or Aira, or in my case using the FaceTime app with my wife if I'm going somewhere a bit strange and I just need to video call just to check out where I may be going. You know, going through gates, following a pathway, etc., into a new building. So I can get there via GPS. It's just that last little bit that I might need a little bit of video assistance with. Now, of course, having a home button also means that we have Touch ID again, because one of the things that has always put me off with the iPhone 10, etc., etc., is the fact that they all use Face ID. Me personally, I've never liked Face ID. I've always preferred using Touch ID to either unlock my phone or to use Touch ID to confirm purchases, or of course to use Touch ID for Apple Pay. So I feel like I've gone through a bit of a time warp from the iPhone 8, which was my last phone I purchased in 2017, missing out several years, and now having an up-to-date phone, up-to-date modern innards, but with the classic look on the outside, is to me a nice present for 2020. So let me unlock my phone. I'm just going to press my home button.
FaceTime.
And there we go, it's unlocked. Now, I actually held my finger down on the Touch ID, which automatically unlocked my phone. I'm going to do it a slightly different way. I'm going to lock my phone again with the power button on the side, right hand side. And I'm going to press the power button again rather than the home button this time. Now if I flick on the screen.
Tuesday, the 19th of May. Press home to unlock button.
Okay, and I press home to unlock. Just going to put my finger on the home button.
FaceTime.
And it's unlocked. Now I didn't actually press in the home button. I just put my finger on the home button and my Touch ID, of course, unlocked the phone. And as far as flicking on the screen, it feels extremely reactive, of course. But let me just flick through so you can hear what it sounds like.
Calendar. Photos, camera, mail, clock, maps, weather, reminder, notes, stocks, news, books, app store, podcast, TV, health, home, wallet, settings, page 2, doc, safari, messenger, music.
Okay, in the screen. Because we've got our home button back again, if you haven't been used to using your home button for a long time because of the iPhone 10 and above, let's say, for example,
calendar, photo, camera, mail, clock, maps, weather.
And under one finger, double tap on weather.
Weather. Narrower. Sunny. 18 degrees.
And, of course, with a standard home button functionality, I just press the home button once. And I'm back to my home screen. It just said weather as it jumped back to the home screen. If I flick off it to the right.
Reminders.
Flick back to the left.
Weather.
There's my weather app in focus with VoiceOver. If I want to bring up my app switcher, of course, it's the home button twice. Press.
App switcher. Weather.
Active. And of course, every time I'm pressing that, I'm getting haptic feedback happening on the phone. So, as I said before, it really feels like I'm pressing a mechanical key on the actual iPhone itself. If I want to come out of the app switcher, I'm just going to press the home button once.
FaceTime.
And I'm back to the top left icon on the home screen on my iPhone. If I want to activate the accessibility shortcut, again, because I've got a home button, rather than pressing the side button three times to turn VoiceOver on or off, in this case, that's what I've associated the accessibility shortcut with in settings, accessibility, right down the bottom for accessibility shortcut. I press my home button three times, or one, two, three.
VoiceOver off.
Turns off VoiceOver. I press it again three times on the home button, one, two, three.
VoiceOver on. FaceTime.
To invoke Siri, I can do it two ways. So I can do HUY Siri. Hey Siri, what is the time?
It's 11:20.
Okay. Or of course, I can hold down the home button. What is the time?
It's 11:20.
So that works beautifully. Another really cool thing about the home button is that you can adjust the haptic intensity of how it feels. So the way to do that is to go and access settings.
Settings. Heading. Search. David Wood. Aeroplane. Wi-Fi. Bluetooth. Mobile. Personal. Notific. Sounds. Do not. Screen. General. Button.
And one finger double tap on general.
About. Button. Software update. AirDrop. AirPlay. Handoff. CarPlay. Home button. Button.
That's the one. One finger double tap.
Done. Button.
And then if I flick through.
Home button haptic. Heading.
It says home button haptic.
You can choose how the home button feels when you press it. Select an option below and press the home button to try it out.
Okay, so you can select an option and then try the haptic feedback out. So if I flick to the right.
One button.
There's one. One finger double tap.
Selected.
And if one. I press the home button now, it's a very faint vibration. Okay, so flick to the right again.
Two button.
Let's try two.
Selected. Two. Dimmed.
That's a bit harder, so medium.
Three button.
And one finger double tap on
selected.
Three.
Three dimmed.
And that's a really sort of clunk clunk vibration when you press the home button. Let me press the home button to go back to the home screen. The other thing to keep in mind about, and this took people off guard when they first encountered a bigger sized iPhone, i.e. the 4.7 one, was the fact that we had this thing called reachability, which actually dragged the icons from the top of the screen down the screen so that you could reach them with one hand. So if I double tap home button, that's the noise you're going to get for reachability. So that's dragged the icons from the top of the screen and that's it going off again. So if you don't want that on because it's confusing, besides tapping or pressing on the home button, you can turn it off. So let me just bring up accessibility settings again. Open up accessibility settings.
Let's take a look at the accessibility settings. Home button. Button.
If I flick back up to touch.
Voice control, switch control, touch, button.
And one finger double tap on touch.
Assistive touch, off, button.
And we've got assistive touch off, flick to the right.
Assistive touch allows you to reachability, on.
So reachability is currently on. If I flick to the right.
Double tap the home button to bring the top of the screen into reach.
Okay, that's what it's for. If I flick back to the left.
Reachability, on.
One finger double tap.
Off.
And I've turned it off. So pressing the home button. And I tap on the home button. Nothing happens. The other thing about the iPhone SE, there's no more 3D touch. It's actually a one finger double tap and hold in screen reading terms. So if I go to the App Store.
App Store.
And do a one finger double tap and hold.
Dismiss context menu.
Okay, and flick to the right.
Edit home screen. Purchased. Button. Updates. Button. Redeem. Button. Search. Button.
So that's a fast way.
Updates. Button.
To get to your updates. Now, as far as the battery is concerned, you can plug in a 18 watt charger to this to do fast charging, 50% in 30 minutes. Of course, you can also plug it into a lightning cable to charge the iPhone as well. I've got a wireless charger that I sit this on and it charges very nicely. And one final thing about the battery life is I take this off charge at about 6 a.m. in the morning and I put it back on charge at 6 p.m. with about 20% left. So the battery certainly lasts well all day. The fact that you don't have an earphone jack anymore, and this is more the fact that if you're updating, then of course you use Bluetooth headphones or Bluetooth speakers, or you use a lightning adapter, or you just use the lightning headphones that came with the iPhone SE. But I think these days people are pretty much used to the fact that phones you can use with Bluetooth headphones, particularly the AirPods or the AirPods Pro, and there's no issue. And I still recommend that people get a case and a glass screen protector, just in case if you happen to drop it. I mean, it's a lovely, beautiful phone, as all iPhones are, to hold in your hand, but it's always good to be safe. And the other really cool feature I absolutely love about this phone that I haven't used yet, and I've always wanted to use when it first became available, was dual SIM support. So the fact that you can have your personal number and your work number in one phone, one's a physical SIM and one's an eSIM, is an absolutely brilliant thing to be able to do. So that may be one option that I will now be able to investigate, because that certainly wasn't available with my iPhone 8. It only became available with later versions of the iPhone. As a modern phone in a classic look, i.e. home button, touch ID versus no home button and face ID, then this phone is an absolute treasure to use, particularly if you're updating from an iPhone 6 or 6S. So there you go. That's a bit of a play around with the new iPhone SE. But anyway, that will do me for this demo. And as always, thanks for listening and bye for now.
And you can hear more from David on the IC podcast, which you can get by downloading it. Just search for IC, the letter I, followed by SEE, all one word. I think it's fair to say Dave's a fan, and quite right so, Robin.
Yeah, I think it's really good, and he highlighted the key features that, particularly if you're coming from the old SE, which was obviously this sort of 5/5S form factor, you know, he highlighted the differences that will strike you. Slightly larger screen, and hence he demoed reachability, which brings the top of the screen down in reach of your thumb. Glass backs and wireless charging, the dual SIM, which is absolutely brilliant, and the lightning cable, I mean the lightning port only, so you lose the 3.5mm socket. So yeah, but I think it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and the price as well is even cheaper than the old SE, so really, really
absolutely
good.
Brilliant. Great phone. Well, now you know, a lot of people have been asking us to do a bit of a deep dive into the SE, so there you go. I hope that has quenched your thirst for knowledge.
Though.
Why?
Because the announcements that we had last week and that we touched upon, for people that are contemplating going for this, or that have older phones in a similar form factor, as he mentioned there, the 6S or the 6 upwards. We won't get tap back on the back of the phone. That's a 10, an iPhone 10 onwards. And
has that been officially announced?
Yeah, Sarah Herlinger was interviewed on another podcast earlier in the week, and she had a colleague, what was his name? Can't remember, but he was a blind developer, and yeah, they both confirmed a lot of extra info on some of the accessibility features that are coming up. Okay. A lot of improvements to Braille screen input, for example, auto panning with Braille displays, all that sort of thing.
I did read about auto panning. Yeah, that's brilliant. It's about time.
But the tap back needs the hardware that the 10 onwards has. And unfortunately, the new marvellous AI for recognising buttons and labels and putting image recognition into a nice sentence apparently is the 10S upwards.
Hang on, so we're talking voiceover recognition here. That's not available on the, or at least the features aren't available on the SE.
Yeah, certainly the case of buttons.
I know we're diving around here a little bit, but we're just to clarify a few things. Sarah Herlinger, of course, is Apple's accessibility person, and we should also say that the features we're talking about here are new features coming in iOS 14. So they're not here yet, but they will be coming from September onwards.
And I think it's really important to mention here because, yes, if people, after having heard that demo, run out and get an SE, which may still be the best choice by far, particularly without infinite budget. So they've confirmed that. I mean, go and listen to the interview itself. It was on Apple Viz, brilliant podcast. But he was saying that the AI that's required for doing on-device, the neural network that's in the chip, is on those phones only.
No,
so the 10S onwards. To be able to do the sort of heuristic evaluation, because he's saying it's not just about looking at the graphics on the button. There's a lot more going on under the hood. So I was really, that's a big data point, guys, to bear in mind.
That's massive.
Because you might have to choose between a home button and these enhanced accessibility features, and that for me is going to be a tough call.
That is a tough one. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm in a very fortunate position because I've got the 11 Pro, but I don't use it anymore. I've updated that one through a developer account to iOS 14 to just get a sense of what iOS 14 is going to be like, and I've been having a play around. Not enough to talk about it yet. I will do next week, though. But that's really sad. I didn't put iOS 14 onto my SE because that's my daily driver and I didn't want to do that. But now if I had, I would have known this, that wasn't there. When I heard that TapBack or BackTap, or whatever it's called, is not going to be available on the SE, I kind of thought that was just a beta thing. It would come in time. I didn't realise that was actually something that's is driven by the hardware itself. I thought the hardware would have been similar enough to achieve that.
Well, and that's very interesting. I think it's quite telling that you've got a 10 and you've got an SE and your daily driver is the SE.
I love the SE. Mm-hmm. I just love it. It does the job. I don't need the screen. My screen's turned off. Why am I burning, battery power? I know everyone gets annoyed when I say this because it doesn't really burn anything, does it? But the point is, I don't need all that fancy stuff. I do like the 11. I think it's a lovely phone. The 11 Pro is a great phone. But it feels like such a waste to me. I think, Andy, you would love the 11 Pro. If I said to you here, Andy, have an 11 Pro, you'd say, oh, thanks very much, Stephen.
I will. Yeah, send it to me.
Not going
to
happen. But, if that were to happen, then, you'd be really happy because it's a beautiful phone, gorgeous screen. Is it as nice as an Android phone? Well, I don't know. That's up to the individual to tell. I think, you've kind of answered that question for yourself by going down the Android route.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous device you've got, and the screens on those are I think far exceed even Apple's in some cases.
Yeah.
Certainly Samsung's do, and I think Huawei's no different. But yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realise all that. Well, okay. Well, that's some breaking news for us.
Depressing,
for sure. Yes, depressing breaking news.
Great, Stephen's going to send me an iPhone. Wow.
Sorry, I think your connection's going there. I think there's something wrong with Zoom.
Breaking up.
Email. We get email. We get your email. Here's your mail today.
Okay, well, look, we'll get into the mailbox and we're going to take a break for some news in a minute, but we'll continue with the inbox for now. Let's go to the first one then, Andy. What have you got?
So this one is from Michael. He says, hello again. It's been a long, hard, uphill struggle, but I have at last cracked Easy Reader on my phone and successfully downloaded a book.
Hey!
I wasn't going to give up on it, he says, and determined it wasn't going to win. He says, sorry if I sounded bolshy. Sorry if I sounded bolshy in my last email, but thanks for listening anyway. Mm. He has a question for you, Robin.
Just before you get the question, I just want to say, don't ever feel that you should be upset about feeling angry about this, because we all feel it. You know, I feel it all the time. I know we all do as society. Mm-hmm. We all get annoyed with things and things get annoyed. But, you know, when something should work a certain way, and if you're on your own and you're blind and you're trying to figure it out, and essentially it is a visual thing, you know, in that respect it's an app, it's obviously designed to be visually used, but also it has got the accessibility in it, and you just can't get it to do it and you want to slam the phone off the wall, that's okay, and feel free to tell us that, because I think it makes other people feel better. I've had so many emails through, we know this, we've heard them from people who've said, I'm so glad I'm not the only one who gets annoyed by this, you know. So, you know, please never feel bad about writing that. Anyway, sorry, and you've got a question for Robin.
Don't let technology win is the message there. A question for Robin. He spoke a few weeks ago about some glasses that you can use with Soundscape. What are these called and where can I get some, please? Thank you to all the team for your hard work and interesting and informative programming each week. Keep up the good work. Kindest regards to you all, Michael.
Well, got a problem with this one.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, it's a sad story, really. I don't know the answer to this, is the honest answer. I'm sorry, this question is for you and I've jumped in.
No.
But we're talking about the Bose frames, aren't we?
We are. I have a slight issue, which means that you might need to talk for a second. I had a lovely smoked salmon and cream cheese sandwich for my lunch.
Where's ours?
And Judith, she always puts sort of ground pepper on top. And just as Andy was reading out that email, technology win is what I'm going to call him from now on. I think that's really good.
I like that. I like it.
I found something between my teeth and I gave it a crunch and it was a whole pepper, a whole corn, you know, peppercorn.
Oh.
So I'm suffering a little bit here.
As fascinating as this is.
Yeah, carry on. You do your bit, and then I'll come in a sec.
You deal with whatever is going on over there. And I'll just continue over here. Bose frames. So they work with Microsoft Soundscape, and the Bose frames. These are, of course, the company Bose that make all the speakers and the cinema speakers you would get for your home cinema. All the fancy stuff. They created these glasses a couple of years back, and they have these little speakers built into the arms of the glasses that kind of fire into your ear lovely sound, and it is actually pretty decent. I'll be honest, I think the sound is great for something like voiceover or for a podcast or an audiobook, but not maybe for listening to the greatest hits of Carole King. There, pick a name from the past that I actually know. So, you know, maybe not for that, maybe not for listening to the Tapestry album, but certainly for enjoying a good audiobook or a Stephen Fry or, you know, whatever it is that you enjoy, then yes. So those work really well for earphones, and because they are open, because they're not in your ear, you can walk around town, you can have them on, you can have them switched on, and you can hear what's going on your phone without having your ears blocked. That's the key point. Hence why Microsoft worked with Bose on this, and they used the technology inside of the Bose frames, because it's not just a pair of glasses. They actually have got some smarts in them, which give them the capability to understand rough directions based on, you know, where you are, positioning and all that, where your head is, and when you move your head, it has the ability to capture all that data and send it back to the phone. Soundscape can use that, and obviously Soundscape is exactly that. It's a soundscape in front of you, and when you use Soundscape with stereo headphones or earphones in, which of course is never really advised when you're out and about, especially if you're blind, then what can happen is, as you walk around town, as you move your phone around, you'll be able to find the location. So for example, say I was looking for a cash machine, and the cash machine, I searched for it on Soundscape and it's there. I start to hear this kind of beep, 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 you know, coming from the far left of me. So as I turn my head with the glasses on, the dot that was on my far left will now be in front of me because I'm looking towards the dot. It's kind of it's positioning properly. Now, the problem is that Bose have suspended their augmented reality program, which was actually the thing that fueled these glasses. Not completely. I mean, you can still use them. They're still usable, but you just don't get the augmented reality feature. And what I don't know yet is whether or not that has an impact on Soundscape. I have asked Microsoft this question, and they've given me a very vague, we'll continue to work with Bose on this, whatever that means. So I don't know, is the short answer. But what I'm saying to you is, if you'd asked this question a year ago, we'd be saying, buy a pair of Bose AR frames immediately, Michael. But unfortunately, I don't know if I can suggest that now.
Well, I mean, there's still loads of them out there. I actually got mine from eBay at a significant discount. So obviously that comes with a certain amount of potential risk. But if you look at the, you know, what they say about the quality of them, like, you know, as good as new or whatever, and look at the rating of the seller. What I think is that with their announcement of suspending the AR part of things, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to stop selling the Bose frames, although they are a premium product, and part of that price was associated with this kind of AR
capability. That's not the issue. The issue is not whether they're selling them or not. The issue is whether or not the Soundscape will still work. We know, for example, that all of the AR projects have stopped or will be stopped. So any AR apps that use any apps that you've got that are, and not many people are using them, and that's the bottom line, hence why it's being ditched.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the association with Soundscape or it uses something else.
Well, so what I say is, if you can get hold of a pair, I'm confident that that feature will carry on working unless Bose literally chooses to push a firmware update that breaks the compass capability within the glasses. So I think actually it's, you know, it's a good time to buy some Bose frames.
I think you should buy a pair from Michael on that basis.
And also, I think that... yeah, thanks. But if you are after some... you were talking earlier about, you know, how good they are for keeping your ears open and that sort of thing. And, you know, whilst the AirPods Pro and the Amazon earbuds have like a pass-through mode, which can...
Terrible.
Would certainly help with safety when you're out and about... The thing I use these frames for 99% of the time is just wearing them to listen to stuff. And that has spawned a huge number. If you look online, there are so many glasses with built-in speakers, right, like a Bluetooth headset in effect. And I would definitely explore looking at those. I know that's not the question that you asked, but, you know, I wanted to throw that out there as well.
Well, actually, and it's also worth mentioning Aftershocks and the OptiShocks glasses that are coming as well. So these are sunglasses that have got bone conduction headphones built in. Now, the way these work is a bit different to the way that the headsets work from Aftershocks. It's actually not really the same company. I'm told that Aftershocks, the company have told me that it's a licensing deal they've done with another business. So they're using the name Aftershocks, but actually it's a slightly different company, and the product is slightly different for that reason. That the bone conduction part doesn't hit your cheeks. It normally would, the headphones would come around the back of your head and sit on your cheeks, and that would deliver the sound via your cheekbones. This one, these glasses, actually go behind your ears. So they bend behind your ears and, I guess, go, you know, under your ears, and that's where the audio gets in. That I'm really intrigued to try, but I like the idea of that because it holds them on. I find my Bose frames are always falling off my head. So it'd be kind of nice to have them, you know, held on there. It's like, you know, those mittens you get, which are kind of tied
string
up each side. So you can't, they can't follow. Yeah, there you go. So anyway, Michael, lots of options, but those ones, unfortunately, don't work with Soundscape. The only ones that will work with Soundscape at the moment from Microsoft is the Bose AR frames, and I can't, and none of us can say how long that will continue. So it's a bit of a gamble at the moment, basically. Okay, let's get one more email before we jump to the news.
Just to make sure, has everyone finished eating their lunch and is not going to choke?
Yeah, yeah, we're all done here. Yeah,
I did lots of muted coughing. I think I'm all right now.
You're all right now. Good.
Email from Julian. Hello there. Reluctant as I am to involve myself in the Hamish Macbeth story for fear I'll prove to be a defective detective in the case, I am, however, puzzled by Robin's conclusion that there are more MC Beaton Hamish Macbeth titles in the RNIB Library Talking Book catalogue than there are available for download from RNIB Reading Services. I can only find the same books in both series numbers 1 through 6 and 28. I wait to be shot down on this one, says Julian. P.S. I haven't read any of them, but a fair number of her Agatha Raisin books.
Yay. They're good.
That's on you. That's on you, Robin.
Well, basically, a friend of mine who's on the Reading Library Service, I said, you know, what's going on here? And she said, oh, well, they're all available in this other one. So that's all I've got to go on. So I've never been a subscriber to the CD or USB service. So, yeah, I've only ever downloaded it with Overdrive and now Easy Reader. So, yeah, thanks a lot for putting me straight.
Quite right. Keep them right. Keep them honest. That's what I say.
I stand corrected, said the man in orthopedic shoes.
Right, okay. Well, let's, don't eat peppers while they're doing that. Right, okay. Let's get some news.
News from the internet.
We'll get back to your email soon, but to the news first. And Andy, you've got a story that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I saw this. Now, I don't know whether it's rumour or whether it's, you know, leaked on purpose, but there's news that the iPhone 12 models that are going to be coming out soon-ish will not include earpods or include a power adapter in the box. Now, this is all from Mac Rumors, but yeah, so one of the joys of getting a new phone, be it iPhone, be it an Android phone or whatever, is you get all the other stuff in the box with it. You get your brick, you get your charging cable, you get your headphones. Now, rumours abound that it's just going to be the charging cable in the box with the phone.
And they're saying a lot of this is to do with the environment. They're saying that they can make the box much smaller. They don't have to have the bigger box because you don't have the charger in there, which does take up the majority of the room. Yeah. So from an environmental standpoint, it's good news. I'm not suggesting for a second that these companies are thinking we can save quite a few quid by not including it in the box.
Yeah.
And you know, then charging a premium if you do want to buy one. Not that Apple would ever do something like that. That's absolute nonsense. It's a slight on their character.
They want to keep, they want to keep the costs low. Now, this may be because of the extra cost of 5G technology into these phones. But in all honesty, apart from the charging cables, which we all go through maybe four or five in a year because we lose them or they break or they just don't charge as well as they used to because they're frazzled or whatever. But the actual brick, the actual thing that goes into the wall that you plug your cable in, how many of those do you have lying around the house that just aren't being used?
Mm-hmm. Well, I counted 16 when I was clearing out last month.
I wasn't expecting that many, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah, 16. And that was just Apple ones. I mean, it was probably a similar amount of Amazon ones, Android ones. I don't think there's a need for them anymore. And bearing in mind as well, a lot of these phones now are wireless charging. So my SE never has a plug in it. I've got one of these little desk Belkin stands, and that's the key one, I think, is the stand, because you can put the phone onto it. It's not the one that lies flat, it's the one that stands up. And what I like about that is that you can put the phone on it, you always know the phone will be charging because it's in the right position. I've always used that, and my phone is never, it's never off it really, and I've got a wireless charging mat next to my bed, so one downstairs, so I don't need to have chargers anymore. So I think this is welcome. At first I was like, hang on a minute, and then I thought, well, wait, I don't even use it, what am I bothering about? The earphones I kind of liked having.
Definitely.
But at the same token, I've got AirPods and whatever else, so I don't know if I need them necessarily. Maybe we should invest more, but yeah, I think they could have chucked in the earphones at least.
I mean, I think that their thinking is sound, because particularly on the brick, charging brick.
Not if you take away the earphones.
No, that's true. they're betting on most people having a surplus of those in and around the house. And, you know, everything's going wireless with the AirPods. They're really trying to push those. So from a cynical point of view, you could say, well, you know, they're just trying to push those. And that's probably, there is an element of truth to that. But from a branding point of view, from an optics point of view, as some people might say, it's not a good look. And it would be very easy for them to include a little voucher or a card, even a nice sort of fancy credit card looking thing in the box that says, if you want a brick, put this in the post or take it to a local Apple store and we will exchange it for a brick. If you want EarPods, ditto. If you want AirPods Pro, then this voucher represents whatever it is that EarPods cost that would have got in the box. Lightning EarPods, something like $27.99 or something, I don't know, from the Apple store. But against AirPods Pro purchase, that would be nothing. So I think there's a lot that they could do to really make this feel better and not penny pinching and green at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. That'll never happen. And the reason I can say that with some certainty is because I remember when they brought out the change towards the Lightning port, and they gave you the Lightning port to 3.0. Well, it was actually when they dumped the headphone jack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they added in the little adapter that was Lightning port to 3.5. And they stopped that after the first iteration, and then it was £9 to buy it. if you lost it, which of course inevitably you did. So yeah, I don't think there's any chance they're going to give you any offers on this or anything else. Apple are not known for that. And in some respects, I think it's a smart move. As I say, I don't think the power is a big issue. I think if you can, my view is, I guess, people say, well, what if you can't afford it? Well, I guess if you can't afford a wireless charger, you probably can't afford an iPhone, is my take on it. So, you know, it's not, if you're at a point where you can afford the iPhone, you can probably afford the extra 10, 15 quid for a wireless charger, or, you know, you can afford an extra few quid on a pair of headphones if you wanted to. That would be my take on it. Is that harsh? Probably sounds harsh, but you know what I mean? It's just, if you can afford one, then you can. If you're struggling to make that decision, don't buy the iPhone. Is my first piece of advice, you know.
How many other people out there are just going to go out and buy a cheap one from Poundland? Though this is the problem, and then you're voiding the warranty that Apple's saying you have to use our brick to charge your phone. Otherwise,
and the Chinese fakes that come over.
Yeah,
and,
any damages caused. Dangerous. Yeah, any damages caused because you're using one that was 10, 15 pounds cheaper. Well, that's on you, I'm afraid. You voided the warranty by doing that. Mm. So that's a bit of a headache there as well.
And the SE2, I think, which is the entry-level, affordable phone, they should keep on boxing it with that, I think.
Well, here's the thing, though. There is talk of them completely ditching every port on the phone. Mm-hmm. So there won't even be a lightning port on there. So that would tell you that there's no need to give you anything. And then maybe that's where it's kind of leading towards. There actually is nothing going to be on the device to plug, no way to plug anything in anyway. Yeah. So why give you a cable?
Is there a little sachet of magic pixie dust for charging up your phone for the next 3 years?
Yeah, that's you right.
Get like an old fashioned crank to put the phone in. So I have a question. What else do you get in the. Do you still get the little pointless stickers when you buy a new iPhone?
Yes.
You get the little apples.
Excuse
they can stop
me,
that
no,
for a start.
No. Listen, if they dump that, I'm not buying them anymore. I have those stickers everywhere.
I've got a million of those. You can have them if you
like. Yeah. I love those. I absolutely adore them. Yeah. I used to. I actually
post
still.
All of your,
I still somewhere have the original Think Different ones with the old logo, which was the coloured. The colourful logo, you know, the apple that was all different colours.
Get those on eBay. That would be a fortune now.
A fortune.
So if anyone listening has any spare stickers, send them to Stephen Scott, care of RNIB Connect Radio, whatever our address is. We're not there at the minute, so...
Yeah, just stick in a post and put Stephen Scott on it. It'll get here. Right, you've got another story. I'm conscious of time, Robin, but we've got time for one more story from you before we get back to the emails.
I do. So the BARTA, the British Assistive Technology Association, have been tasked by the WHO, the World Health Organization, to do the UK version of a global survey. And there are hundreds of countries, well, not hundreds maybe, but there are many, many countries that are going to do this with their population. And it's basically for everyone with a disability, their family and friends who know about the importance of assistive technology for themselves or for their nearest and dearest to take an online survey. The idea is that every country will put together an essential AT kit list, the core AT that the government is then tasked to fund by the public purse. Whether the UK government will look at the list and say, OK, we're now actually suddenly going to start buying blind people screen readers, for example, is another question. But that's what this is all about. The World Health Organization is putting together a list which is almost like, you know, the equivalent of a hearing aid or a prosthetic limb or something like that, technology that people with a range of disabilities really need to, you know, get by and be full members of society. So we strongly recommend that people go. If you search for BATA, BARTA, WHO, WHO, AT survey, then you'll find where that page is. We'll also put a link in the show notes to a summary story on the AbilityNet website, which also links to the survey, gives a bit more information about why it's being done. But yeah, everybody should go and take the survey to make it clear that, you know, this is the AT that's important to me. I want it on the list. And then hopefully, who knows, it might be taken up by the government as something that will be core funded AT for people going forward.
Well, there was talk for a while of making changes to personal independence payment that would mean that people could essentially exchange. And the way you can with Motability, if you're disabled and you want a car, you can exchange part of your personal independence payment, or as it was, disability living allowance, in exchange for the vehicle. So essentially the payment comes out of that budget.
Yeah, we could lease a Braille display.
Well, that's it. You know, if you're talking, I mean, I was thinking about the, I don't know who would buy this. I know there's people who probably would need it. But, you know, the 80 cell Focus 80 Braille display, which costs something like $8,000, you know, that's a lot of money. And if you could have that, but just essentially lease it through your personal independence payment, that could be quite good. You know, I mean, it would have to be a choice, though. I don't think it should be something that became mandatory. You know, if you wanted to buy it outright, you could. If you wanted to, you know, offset it that way, you could. But I think that would be, I mean, I was thinking about there's big news, of course, that we haven't even gotten to yet, and we really must. I just came back into my head there as we were talking, but we haven't even mentioned IRA yet, which has launched in the UK, and it's a big deal, actually, when you think about it. It has arrived, although I have to say, not quite as big a deal it would have been if they had brought with it the hardware and we were able to get our glasses with our cameras in them and all that jazz. But sadly, that's not an option at the moment. The only way you can do it is via your phone. But, you know, that's quite an expensive. I mean, I think on the top tier, it's £159 a month to have IRA.
Yeah.
Which is very expensive. But at the same time, if you're getting personal independence payment, arguably that is what it should be coming out of. And I think in that case, that actually makes a lot of sense.
We should also stress that 5 minutes is, you can get 5 minutes free.
Yes, you can.
The first 5 minutes of every call is free. And the 5 minutes free thing is very highly signposted in the app. When you've opened it up, it, you know, it's right there front and center saying, yep, first 5 minutes free. So give it a go. You know, you could use it extensively before you decide to go for one of those tiered prices.
I think the second tier up is, was it £79 a month?
Yeah.
And then it goes up to £159 a month. So it is a considered thing. I mean, for sure, if you need the minutes. I think, and I'm going by memory here, but I think it's 120 minutes is £80, and then 200 minutes is £159. I think that's right. You can get all the information from ira.io, but
it's also a 24/7 service as well.
Yeah, that's so, right. Yeah. It's available anytime. And you're getting that specialist support. You know, because the questions are going to start, aren't they? You know, well, what's the difference between this and Be My Eyes? And it's a valid question, but the key point about IRA, from my understanding of it, is that you're getting a professional agent, someone who's paid to sit there and be there with you. You know, if you paid for the top tier, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. She was saying, well, what would be the benefit of having that? And I said, well, she loves to go clothes shopping, right? But she really struggles going clothes shopping. And of course, at the moment, that's a complete nightmare with everything else. But in normal times, she would have gone to a store and she would want to independently go around and look at the clothes, you know, figure out what size she wants, what the colours are, all that stuff. With an IRA subscription, she would be able to do that because someone would be there to sit on the other end of her phone and talk her through everything she wanted to know, everything she wanted to see. And that's what that service is there for. Whereas Be My Eyes is volunteer-led, so, you know, you'd be asking someone who's, you know, trying to get three kids out the door, who's, you know, happy to answer a call for a minute, to, you know, wander around Marks and Spencer with you for the next hour and a half. That's not feasible. So, you know, that's why you're paying for this service. And there's a whole lot more. You know, things about routing, you know, finding places, getting through.
Doing research for you.
Research for you, yeah.
They have your whole profile. They know all your preferences. And, you know, so let's do a feature on it to really kind of outline the differences.
Yeah, we should talk more about it. But we've just got the news in this week that it's happened, so we want to mention it. But I am intrigued by it. I am. And maybe this is where some of that benefit could go. But anyway, interesting story there. I'll definitely be signing that survey. I quite fancy a new Sonos Arc and Cinema surround system. So I'm going to see if I can get that on the list as well.
Hot tub.
Very essential. Well, you know, I need an accessible outside bath. That's what I feel I need, preferably one that bubbles up. So there you go.
Well, to be serious for a moment, hydrotherapy is actually really, really important for some
absolutely.
People with different disabilities. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's not. I'm not referring to hydrotherapy. Aside. I'm just, yeah, I'm talking about a bath in my back door, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yes, anyway, back to the emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Right, okay, we get the point. Okay, so what's the next what's the next email?
The next email is from Greg. Hello. As one who does not live in the UK, I have no experience with the RNIB library services, but what I hear on Tech Talk horrifies me. I hope, Greg, that's the same point. You're not just saying that everything's
just general.
Goodbye, Greg.
It seems to me that the copyright law in the UK must be at odds with the Marrakesh Treaty. For some time in the US, there has been no requirement to gain permission to make books freely available to people with print disabilities in a specialised, accessible format. And there is no provision in the Marrakesh Treaty that requires countries to amend their laws to remove any need for permission. This means that in the US, besides access to the 250,000 odd audio titles in our National Library Service, we have access to some million titles from Bookshare, not the limited educational titles available in the UK, but also the millions of titles from the Internet Archive Open Library in protected DAISY format. Therefore, in the US, we have all of the Hamish Macbeth titles in audio on the Bard website, all of the Andy McNab titles are in DAISY text on Bookshare, and so much more. Blind people should have as much access to books as sighted people do, and with Open Library from the Internet Archive and Bookshare in the US, we're pretty close. The NLS books and Open Library require a specialised device, of which the Victor Reader is one of them, with a key from the National Library Service that unlocks the books and prevents private piracy. There was a recent discussion on the AT Banter podcast, which discussed the provision of the Marrakesh Treaty and others. Giving a lot of shout out to other podcasts today. Anyway, that email is from Greg in Pennsylvania.
Well, and this, we need to maybe get someone on from Bookshare to answer this. And I'm thinking of someone who we could talk to maybe next week on this, just briefly on the show, because I wonder if perhaps things may be changing on that front with the announcement of the new Reading Services Library. My understanding is, and I've asked this question and I've never really got an answer that I fully understand, but then I'm not a smart person. I've heard that, from my understanding anyway, that Bookshare will become part of the Reading Services Library. So actually, it will all become one in the end. So we will get access, not just in educational circles, everyone will get access to the Bookshare catalogue. And if that's true, that would be brilliant. But I'll get some clarity on that for you, maybe for next week's show. Let's get another email.
So, this next one from Pete. I heard the email regarding someone having problems logging onto EasyReader to access RNIB reading services. I had a similar problem, which turned out to be my iPad using the on-screen keyboard defaulting to capital letter for the first letter of my email address. Oh. And I've had this on a rare occasions on other sites as well. I tried double-tapping the shift key to deactivate the shift key, but without success. That may set it as a fixed capital letter? I'm not sure. I solved the problem by using my Bluetooth keyboard, or it just gave in and just let me do it anyway. I'm not sure if this was an issue with the setup or the text box on EasyReader or just an inept user. And I hope this helps the RNIB reading services because it's great. That email is from Pete.
Thanks, Pete. You know, wouldn't it be great if on every single website there was just a button that you just ticked that said blind and it just let you in? I can't do this with captures and I can't be bothered with passwords. Just let me in.
And it was only visible to a screen reader. That's good.
That's right. It's only available to a screen reader user. That's a brilliant idea. We've got to start doing that.
Yeah, so one tip would be, I certainly do this on iOS, I create text shortcuts for all my email addresses. So RGM is my shortcut for my Gmail address. And you just type those three characters and hit the space bar on the on-screen keyboard and it auto-completes. You then have to backspace the space, you know, have to get rid of the space again. There's probably a way of doing it so that it expands it without hitting the space bar, but I don't know it. But that's certainly a lot quicker.
You're a text field, you could just hit tab, no?
If you had a keyboard plugged in, but this is doing it on your iPhone with the on-screen keyboard, for example.
You could just hit the return key then.
Well, what about if the next field down is password and you haven't... you think it would just automatically go to the next field down?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
My experience has always been with text replacement, which you're talking about.
Yeah.
It would have to be... you'd have to hit the space bar.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, that's so much quicker and more reliable because, you know, you've only got to get one letter wrong and then it'll reject it. So,
but yeah. Don't you use Keychain on Safari?
No, but it might be a site that you've never been to before. So you've got to put your email in for the first time. So, yeah.
Guess who's not been using Keychain?
No, if you go to a website that you've never been to, Keychain won't help.
It will.
Why?
Well, if you're signing in, say if I was going to, I don't know, a website that I've not been into. Well, I see what you mean. If it's I see where you're going with this. A website you've never signed up to.
Yeah. Brand new website. Right, okay. Whack in your email address to sign up for it.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay, we've got time for a very short one, but I mean very short.
Oh, here's some praise. This is from Peter. Hello, everyone. I have to say that this is one of the best shows I have heard in many a long day. Mm-hmm. I like being into active shows. It shows that problems can be solved and advice can be given. All of your other shows are good. I'm guessing he's referring to everything else on RNIB Connect Radio. But this one must rank as one of my favourites now. You've got the 3 o'clock slot. Make it so and make it permanent.
Oh.
Take care. That's from Peter in Nottingham. So our little extra email show. Yeah,
if only that were true, Peter. Now, we only got one off. It was just a one-off that week, unfortunately. But yeah, look, if you want to get an extra hour, you got a campaign. Start a campaign. I'm saying nothing. I'll just leave it at that. It's a bit like my MBE I'm waiting on that Robin's got. I'm waiting for that to come through in the post. Thank you. If you just mentioned to her Madge, that would be great. Right, look, that's it for us for this week. Thank you so much once again, guys. We got through so much. And, on next week's show, we're actually going to be talking about a very interesting topic. Our own Red Sail is joining us from Read On here on RNIB Connect Radio. He's here to ask a question. He wants to buy a new laptop. And he wants to know what is a good idea, what should he go for? And we're going to be talking about this from a blind perspective and the things you should be looking to buy or the kind of computer you'd be looking to buy based on certain criteria that a lot of people might not consider when it comes to this. So, very exciting. So getting into all that on next week's show. And if you want to get in touch and keep the emails coming, please do. If you have any audio features you'd like to record for us, perhaps using voice memos on your phone or whatever you use to record on an Android, some slate and chalk, I guess, then you can do that and send it in via email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Remember, we're on Twitter @RNIBRadio, and we'll catch you again for another show next week. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.